Blog Talk Radio.
Life seems to crush your dreams, so find your balance for all your needs. A little work, some family fun. Find your love, keep your life on the run. Told you how the story goes, so write your own script before you grow old. Live your life, laugh out loud. Own who you are, stand up proud. You gotta find what works for you. Find a balance that lets you be you.
Good evening and welcome to the Star Chamber Show live podcast. It is a nice Wednesday evening here in Central Kentucky, where I'm broadcasting to you live for episode number 402. This is Stephen Zimmer, and I will be joined shortly by the wonderful, the vivacious, the loquacious Holly Phillippe. But right now, it'll be just me for a couple of minutes. Holly is just run a little bit late, but yes, that's because yeah, things are always very, very busy here, folks. But that's kind of how it rolls. But anyway, we are going to get into some updates for you from the Imaginarium Convention, the event that this podcast is affiliated with. And we have an absolutely fantastic guest to share with you tonight. And I think Holly is just checking in here. Hold on. Let me see if she is on the line here. Holly, there you are. There is Holly. Yay. She's in. It's working. All right, your voice is just a little light, Holly, so just make whatever adjustment you need to make there. You're just
I'm a little bit away from the phone. I'm having to use the speaker, and I'm multitasking at the moment, but I will fix it.
Multitasking. That's Holly's specialty. Definitely.
Yes.
Well, I'll go ahead and get some updates so you can multitask for a second to get settled.
Thank you.
We do have several new panelists. Last week we had a lot of good announcements to share with you, and this week is no exception. We do have four, in fact, of brand new panelists, including several, well, actually all four that are folks that attendees of Imaginarium definitely love, and they come from a number of different areas, for instance. One is Thomas Moore, and he's an award-winning author, screenwriter, and filmmaker. Super talented guy, also a great teacher, and so you definitely want to catch any programming that he is on. Yeah, he's a fantastic filmmaker, and usually he has something submitted in the film festival and screening, so be on the watch for that. I mentioned
he's
that. Yep, he is. Yes, he is an author. I did mention that. He is an award-winning author as well. Also coming this year is author and game designer Brent Campbell, and he's got some amazing books, some really amazing books on tabletop wargaming, and a brand new one coming out soon that's about collecting super rare and scarce Kentucky books, and it's a heck of a good book.
Very cool.
And it's going to be coming up pretty soon. It's really cool. It's on area of book collecting that maybe a lot of people don't know about. But it's absolutely fascinating stuff. Be on the lookout for that book release. But Brent is a super cool guy. And he is a tabletop war game designer.
Yes. He's a great addition to have with Steve Jackson.
Oh, yes. And he is excited about Steve coming. Yeah, he's told me many times that he is really, really pumped about Steve Jackson being there. And I know it's the same way for all the gamers, for sure. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's a big one for sure. And then we also have coming as author, actor, and voice actor, Michael Ignacio Jr. And he is a great guy. He's definitely a guy that you just love after you meet him. Super cool guy. And a very, very talented voice actor and actor who is also an author. And so you definitely want to meet him for sure. And then you also should meet somebody that we love here on the podcast and at the convention. And in the past, I've had the pleasure of working with him in film projects. And let me tell you, he's a great guy. guy to work with. I just love him. He's been on the show before, and that's author, poet, filmmaker, and mental health advocate Sheridan C. Hall. Sheridan, he's a great, great guy. Yes. So yeah, we have a quartet of absolutely fantastic panelists to report to you this week, all coming this summer: Michael Ignacio Jr., Sheridan C. Hall, Thomas Moore, and Brent Campbell. So yeah, that's a definitely reason to celebrate. And as always, we got more stuff coming down the pike every week. We got new info. We're waiting right now on a response from possible new Imaginator guests. So day-to-day thing, so be on the lookout for that. That could happen any day now, so cross your fingers. But yeah, it looks like we will add possibly, we're looking at one more Imaginator guest. And again, yeah, it's sponsorships make those things possible. So yeah, if any of you are inclined to be an individual patron or sponsor, please do go over the site, check that out. We still do have expo space available in the main expo hall in Creative Alley. There's ad space in our program that's available to reserve and some other things. So definitely, yeah, check all that stuff out on the site. So, yeah, Holly, do you have any updates of your own that you'd like to give on anything? Because I know both of us have been just mired in work the past few days. But is there anything new you want to share?
I've been pretty much mired in work. And I just, off the top of my head, I can't think of anything at the present moment.
Nothing in addition to what I had.
More workshops and panels shortly. People be on the lookout. I'm going to tell you, there will be a wrestling panel at some point. I'm still working out the details, but yes, there will definitely be a wrestling panel. So that's going to be fun. We're not actually going to wrestle.
What?
But we are going to discuss it.
Well, I know that Dwan Hearn Moon is going to be thrilled about that, and he is in the chat room as we speak.
Yes.
And he gave us the smiling emoji.
Moderator, more than likely, it will probably
yes,
be Moon.
You just got a smiling emoji, so he is happy. So that's we work to make you happy. We actually do think of you when we're doing these things, Moon. Yes, we think of the smile it shall bring you, and we're glad to see that. So good stuff. But I'll go ahead, though, and I will give, tonight's show. I want to definitely give the spotlight to those who brought you tonight's show. And tonight it is the dynamic duo of Kurt Bostedt Publications and Sandy Lender, the genre blender, the one and only behind Sandy Says Read. So let me go ahead and give you a little bit about Kurt Bostedt, and then I'll give you a little bit from Sandy, and then we'll continue the show and wait for an awesome guest who's going to be joining us just in a few minutes. I'm really looking forward to tonight's guest, by the way. So here we go. Per Bostedt Publications is a small press based in Louisville metro area specializing in speculative fiction and other outside-the-box books. With 40 titles in print and ebook formats and a handful of audiobooks, Per Bostedt offers a little bit of everything. Follow the investigations of Private Eye David Blaze and M.B. Dabney's An Untidy Affair, a historical mystery set during the 1985 police bombing of the Move House in Philadelphia. Or join the psychic private investigator Alan Rodriguez in New Mexico in A Handful of Dirt by Janie Franz as he tries to clear an elderly man wrongfully accused of murder. You can find these titles and more at BostedtPublications.com at Amazon, or you can find the press in person at In Conjunction in Indianapolis and Louisville's Imaginarium Convention in July and Prime Crime in Indianapolis in October. For Bostedt Publications, where Timeless Tales unfolds. Thank you to T. Lee Harris, Marion Allen, and Sarah Marion, as I call them, the literary trifecta, or if you prefer, the literary triumvirate. Either will work. They are just absolutely fantastic people. I'm looking forward to seeing them hopefully sooner than later. So now we'll go over to Sandy Lender for a little bit of her. And again, please do, while you're online tonight listening to the show, go over to YouTube, find Sandy Lender's channel, and click the subscribe button and add, of course, all notifications so you don't miss anything. She has a great channel over there, and it's free. It's free, so just go over there. It takes you just like less than a minute to do this. But, yeah, add Sandy on YouTube. Her channel is fantastic. Here we go.
Hey, Star Chamber listeners. Did you know that author Sandy Lender has a BookTube channel on YouTube? She's using the platform to talk about books and stories and indie authors and new characters you might not have heard of before. And she's doing it all with a positive spin. Check out Sandy Lender at Sandy Says Read on YouTube for all the creative, bookish goodness.
Thank you, Sandy. And that's right, Sandy Says Read. Yeah, she's just full of vibrancy and energy, and yeah, she's always got some cool commentary and reviews and all kinds of stuff she has on her channel. Good stuff. So go over there, give her a follow, and definitely check out her channel, and leave some comments. So yes, folks, Sandy, she is just absolutely awesome. And on a personal note, though, I also should have a new book finished, another one, in the next few days. I'm sitting at about 102,000 words right now. Second book of the new Raiden Valkyrie duology, and coming right down to the finish line. I'm past the grand finale climax, and I'm just tying up the end right now. So yes, I should be just either a couple days away, maybe 3 days away, but keep an eye out. But yeah, I'm actually about to finish a novel, and yeah, Holly's actually seen me emerge with in a very jubilant mood lately. So I've had some good writing sessions since returning from our trip to the Writers of Dayton, who I should definitely want to give a shout out to them. Yes, we had a trip up there to speak to their writers group. Thank you to Colleen Green for the invitation. Met some great writers, had a good time doing our presentation with them, and we then went out to lunch with a few of them afterwards. But yeah, Holly, that was a great, great group, wasn't it?
Oh, so fun. And we told them, yeah, we definitely plan on going back. But I'll tell you, that is one huge library. It is amazing.
Yes.
They've even got a green screen room where, like, high school kids and stuff that, you know, couldn't afford to do all this stuff at home could come there. And like they said, they have a lot that make, like, music videos and stuff. And they can rent out computers, like laptops and stuff. And as long as they bring them back in good condition, they let them rent them out, you know, as much as they want for free. And so they've got all this equipment and everything. It's just amazing, you know, what all they're offering the community.
Yep, it's an amazing library. Again, it's right in downtown Dayton. Dayton, real easy town to navigate. It's not the hustle and bustle kind of city, you know, where you're having to fend for your life driving the streets. It's very easy to get around it. And going to that library, I mean, it's great. They got free parking right inside, really nice parking garage that's built into it for free parking. But yeah, definitely a top tier library. I mean, it was so really nice. And when you're with company like the Wright Writers of Dayton. Yeah.
Yeah, the Wright Writers of Dayton. They're such a good group. They're going to come. Some of them are coming to Imaginarium for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And with their Plano 2, they've, you know, purchased or tickets and planning on coming.
Yeah, several come on board, so, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, several that's
fantastic.
Check us out.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's exciting because they could spread the news up in that area, you know. I told them once they come, they're hooked. They're going to have to come every year then.
Yeah, I think they're going to love it. Yeah, especially the ones that I met that I know are coming. That I could definitely tell they're definitely Imaginarium type people. They're going
to
absolutely love it. Yeah,
you
get the sense for these things,
I mean,
after a while.
And it's such an eclectic group, all ages. It started out as like a critique group like 10 years ago. It's been going on for like a couple of decades now. But they're just such a great group. I mean, they were asking questions. They were interested.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we didn't bore them to death, and we spoke over an hour. We could have went on. I know there was more questions people wanted to ask. They's like, we could keep you here all day. We's like, well, you know, if everybody wanted to stay, we'd stay, but, you know.
Yeah, they're great
but
hosts.
We went to lunch. Yeah, we walked down the road to this cool little pub, like, and it was really neat. It was like Mardi Gras on the inside, and had a great lunch. We had some Reubens that were cooked to perfection, and just a really cool vibe in there.
Yeah, I think it was called the Mudlick Tap Room, if I'm not mistaken. And it was it was
like
really, really good. The Reuben definitely hit the spot for sure. And unfortunately, I had to drive. Otherwise, I'd have indulged in one of their fine beer selections. And they had a big bourbon list, too. Very tempting, but like I said, I had to drive Holly home safely from Dayton, so I had to be good. But boy, it was, they had a nice selection of stuff, and man, that Reuben definitely hit the spot, and good stuff. I really, really like this place, and Wright Riders of Dayton is fun because it's a play on the word Wright, like, you know, Wright State University up there. You know, the Wright brothers, you know, they actually have a good Air Force Museum, by the way, up in Dayton. You should definitely check out. But it's a play on words, the Wright Riders of Dayton. And I got to play on that one when we introduced ourselves. I said, I'm glad I didn't stumble into the meeting of the wrong Riders of Dayton, because I hear that group's kind of sketchy. So I got to break the ice. I've been dying to play on that one.
Poor
Colleen. Yes,
I mean,
she knows my
girl.
She knows my sense of humor, and yeah, I'm always cracking jokes and stuff, and that's what I did during the beginning. I even joked about, you know, Colleen having the reason she has big crowds around her tables at conventions that she gives out free beer, and of course, and she doesn't, not really, but I have fun.
Because
Colleen
funny.
Never knows
it's
what I'm going to say.
Anyway. It's funny.
Oh, see here, I'm just checking in to see if our guest is logged in yet.
But yeah, it was a lot of fun. We're willing to do that if people want us to come talk. We answer publishing questions. We talked about the podcast. And I know we're going to have a few more callers, a few more listeners for the podcast. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they have some very good questions, very interesting questions that we got to answer.
Yeah, there's mm-hmm. looked like there's a range of experience among the writers that are there, some that have been, you know, published many times, some are yet to be published. Looked like there was a good mix of genres in the types of writers that were there. It was a really balanced group from what I could tell, and that tells me, it's probably a really good group to be a part of, because you probably do get a lot of perspectives, you know, not just from different genres, but also from, you know, people have different levels of experience in publishing and whatnot.
We do so much different stuff, so you know, we can talk a little bit about anything, you know, that people want to talk about, the revolving the creative sphere, writing. Focused.
Yes. No, absolutely. Yeah, we definitely can. You know, we can. You know, if any of you know Holly and I, yeah, we can definitely chat. They did sound like they begrudgingly had to bring the meeting to an end, because I know the fellow that was kind of like the organizer for the meeting definitely would
have
wanted to continue. Yeah, and he's one of the ones that went to. And he's one of the ones that did go to lunch afterwards. So,
Man.
So right now we're just waiting on our guests tonight to call in. Sometimes they're just running a little bit behind, but I do have a message in just as a reminder here.
Okay. We'll
keep chugging.
Do what? Yeah, we'll keep chugging along.
Oh, of course we will. Yeah.
Moon is in the chat room, and I want to say congrats to him. He just finished the first draft of his new script. So that's exciting. Way to go, Moon. Congratulations. Can't wait to
What is the, absolutely.
I'll ask you, Stephen. Stephen, so I'll put you in the hot seat for a minute.
Wait, give Moon another shout out, because it looks like that when we were talking about Sandy Lender's channel, it looks like she also did a review of his book on her channel as well. So there's another incentive.
Yeah.
There's another incentive for you folks to go over to Sandy's channel.
There
so you can check out Dwan Hearn's new book review on there. And while you're there, like and subscribe and all that good stuff. So yes, put me on the hot seat, Holly. We can do this while we wait.
Hot seat. What do you find since you are a screenwriter too, what do you find is the most challenging thing about screenwriting versus writing prose, writing books?
Well, coming from being a prose writer at my foundation, the most difficult thing for me when I was starting to write screenplays was the minimalist style. The temptation to want to describe the, you know, locations or a setting or something like that. You know, I wasn't so much, you know, didn't have so much of a trouble when it came to, you know, really focusing on the dialogue to bring things out. And you know, of course, you can't use and get into the heads of the characters with interior thoughts like you can in prose. You know, everything has to be shown, you know, obviously in a screenplay on the screen. But I do think that, yeah, the hardest thing for me was not to get too descriptive when we're going to a different location or scene in the script, and the temptation to just put a little too much description in. I think that's something that I think many prose writers have a little difficulty with, making that transition. Whereas if you came, you know, up writing predominantly screenplays as your foundation, you may not have that kind of issue. But yeah, when you're used to painting, you know, a scene completely with words in a book, sometimes it's hard to make that jump and learn to just pare down and trust the, you know, the format and understand why you don't do those things. Yeah, obviously there's times when a screenplay you're gonna put a key thing in and have a little bit more if it's something really really pertinent to the story. But mostly a lot of white space, as I call it, on a screenplay page, and
right,
that's what you want to see. Yeah, especially
yes,
you see that a lot.
So it's explicit, you know, the details. Yeah. Yeah, so I would never try to screenwrite in a million years. That's not my cup of tea.
Yeah,
I'm glad we have you screenwriters, but it's not everybody's cup of tea, and it's definitely not mine, and I can admit it. Neither is bookbinding, but, you know. I got another question.
Yeah,
here's another one. We do discuss, a lot of times it comes up, I'll have people question me about Imaginarium. It's a panel a lot of times. We discuss it. Is overcoming writer's block. Some people don't believe in writer's block. They'll tell you, you know, you just need to sit down and flush it out, do it, or whatever. But other people are just, you know, their mind goes blank and nothing comes, no matter what they do. So what is your advice for getting through, pushing through a writing block?
Well, I mean, all writers are different, and I think they'll have different ways of getting through that kind of issue. But for me, there's a couple key things that I always do that help me to avoid bogging down. And one thing has been developing my own writing space, a space that I have that's absolutely dedicated only to writing. That's the only thing that occurs in that space. I have a separate computer. It's not online, so it has absolutely no distractions from, you know, social media or notifications or anything. I don't take, of course, my mobile phone in with me either, so there's nothing like that there. You know, the only time I will take, like, my mobile phone in is if I'm doing, you know, in a research phase and, you know, just using it to poke around and get a couple things, look up a couple things. But when I'm, you know, writing, right, you know, I definitely keep away from everything else and have a computer that's solely for writing and at a space that I solely use for writing. And I always do the same kind of habit, play music, that kind of thing. And so over time, it's I described it this weekend as Pavlovian, and I have before, but it kind of gets your brain into a creative zone whenever I sit down in that space. And it always kind of just clicks. And that's happened after I did that for a while back in the 2000s, started to really get in that kind of groove with that type of approach, and it's always worked really well. It's really worked well for that. The other thing that I also recommend is if you're kind of stuck in a scene or a section, and, you know, just getting a little bogged down, there's no harm in going forward to another scene in your story, especially if, like, you're writing an ensemble cast type story with multiple, you know, characters, even if you're writing a single narrative, like, you know, I'm writing a Raiden Valkyrie story, for example, and, you know, in one scene, you know, might be getting a little bogged down, and I might, you know, not completely have found my way through it. Sometimes I will go forward to something else in the storyline that I have in mind, and do another section, kind of, and that just keeps it chugging. And I've always found that when I kind of, you know, hop back to go ahead and round out the previous one that I was getting slowed a bit on, sometimes it, yeah, totally unclogs it, and you just roll and do really, really well with it. So I think two things. I think having a very dedicated space can help a lot of people, a place that's only for writing and following along with that and establishing it and getting that kind of place where your mind kicks in. And the other thing is not being afraid to, you know, go on to another scene if one scene's kind of bogging you down. So I think that those are two pieces. Again, that's not the only solutions. There are others, but for me, those are two that work well.
I like writing prompts. How do you feel about writing prompts? See, I think even if you're working on one particular book and you get stuck and your mind's kind of blocked a little bit, I think writing prompts help. Just get you a prompt. Look them up online or. I know somebody, I forget who it was, asked on Facebook the other day, give me some writing prompts about this photo, you know, and I typed in some stuff, and there were some really good answers on there because, you know, the creative people typed in. So something like that, and because as long as you're writing and you're getting the creative juices flowing, as long as you've got that going and you make that routine to write at least something every day, then it'll iron itself out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think for a lot of people, yeah, writing prompts do work well. I'm not a writer that's typically, you know, use them, but I do right. Often, you know, see, you know, while watching writing discussions and threads and things like that. Yeah, writing prompts really can kickstart very effectively for a lot of writers. So, yeah, I know you do very well with them, for example. you're very good at coming up with them. I mean, you came up with one for one of our favorite people, Barbara Evers, the other day. I remember chatting with me about that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was really cute.
Yeah, and it was a good one.
Yeah, I'm good at that.
You had a really
good Yeah.
Because I remember I was driving and you were telling me what it was, and I was like, yeah, that's a good writing prompt. It was about squirrels, if I recall everything exactly. Yeah. And he was pondering. The squirrel was pondering. I remember that word.
High atop his majestic oak. He was, yeah.
Oak tree, yes. And he was pondering.
Nut, what was it?
Yes.
Every nut it was something. In what it cracked up to be or something like that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. As he mm-hmm. yeah, you had mm-hmm. the word ponder in there. I thought that was great because I always think of the squirrels
ponders.
That you care for in our backyard. I always think of them as very pondering squirrels that probably ponder a lot. They probably ponder Holly.
Yeah.
Who is this?
I'm sure they
this
do.
Holly. But that is
you're
a good
like,
one.
Where's my next meal coming from? That's funny. Well, here's another one. What comes first for you? Is it the plot or the characters, and why? Why? How come?
Well, in the midst of some of my character-driven franchises, I mean, it's a story or a plot, or a very key plot kind of element that jumps forward first. That, you know, it's going to, you know, take the character on some kind of adventure or journey. So in a lot of the books, once I have a character established or a book series established, it often is the plot that does, you know, lead the charge for that. You know, when I'm initially coming up with ideas for a series or I'm coming up with ideas for a character type franchise like Raiden, Valkyrie, or Ragnar Stormbringer, at the earliest stage, yes, it typically starts with a character that jumps out in mind, that grabs me, that wants me to tell their story, and goes from there. And often the character will lead me into the first journey. But once I've been down that road, then the future plots and lands and settings and things like that will be the kickstarters for the next ones. So it's a little bit of early, it's character that leads the charge, and then after I'm into a series or a franchise, then it's plot. So that would be my answer.
Cool.
Yep.
What is your since it's the beginning of the year, you know, people make all these New Year's resolutions. What would be your writing resolution for the year?
I don't typically make like a concrete. I don't make any New Year's resolutions, really. I'm not one of the type that does that typically. But my focus is just simply do what I continue to do, and that's just write regularly. And that's something we talked about at the writers group meeting this past weekend. You know, I don't adhere to a specific word count goal or anything like that. I typically, you know, just want to keep on a consistent schedule. Where most every morning, you know, I am getting in a writing session, and sometimes that might be a few hundred words, sometimes it might be several thousand words, you know, varying sizes. And for fun, you know, I do keep track of, you know, how many words I do get in a session, just to kind of keep an eye on how the book is building up, just for fun, for my own purposes. But it's never about having to hit a certain word count. It's just consistency and regularity, and that's. To me, that's the thing that always keeps your mind in the creative zone and keeps your creative muscles trained, and as opposed to binge writing, you know, where you just do a whole lot in a, you know, a little bit short days and then go for a spurt without doing anything and then go back to it. I think it's a lot better to write regularly. And another thing is a lot, some people that adhere to word counts can also get frustrated very quickly because life happens, you know, very busy with the family, that kind of thing, kids. And if they start falling short of the hard word count goal, they can get really frustrated. And I've seen this happen many times, unfortunately, like during the NaNoWriMo month. I've seen it really affect some authors negatively when they adhere too firmly to a word count goal. So I am of the school of just making sure that you write, you know, on a regular basis, whether that's 300 words or 3,000 words. And that's, you know, that's the only resolution in a way that I have going forward, is just keep on that consistent schedule and keep chugging. And this year I'm hoping to write some more books if all goes well.
Of course. And this is a good one. I've got a really good one. I've never heard this one answered, actually, but it makes sense because Anne Rice has even talked about this, and this is what led her to write the last three Lestat books that she did, because she had finished The Vampire Chronicles years ago. She put them down. She left it open-ended. She left Lestat to be with all of us out in the world and let us, you know, do what we may with him and think about and ponder. My word ponder, I love it. And she said he wouldn't shut up. He kept coming back, and he would not shut up. And if you know the Brat Prince, if you know Lestat, yes, he's very arrogant, and he said yes, and he's demanding, and he would not shut up, she said. So finally she had to pump out these last three books because he just wouldn't quit. And if Anne would have lived longer, bless her heart, there would have been, I'd say, another Lestat book or two, but because he definitely wasn't done speaking. But her son, Christopher, he can't really take up writing that character. People would have a complete meltdown. And so, yeah, no, that's you know, that Lestat comes from Anne's brain. But the question I have for you is, do you miss your characters? And what happens to them when your series is done? Do you think about it? You know, if you just leave it unanswered like she did, just left it open with Lestat and left him for the fans, all of us fans. So do you miss your characters that you haven't wrote about in a while?
Yes, very much so. And there was a period in my life after I lost my mother where I kind of went into this, fog. And I've talked about it before, but the Raiden Valkyrie character kind of emerged in my mind as this kind of like beacon and really pulled me out of the doldrum and as far as creatively, and got me going again, because, you know, the other two series that I had at the time, the Rising Dawn Saga and the Fires in Eden series, of course, you know, my mother had been around for those, and she always, you know, would give her the first copy of the book, each book when it was released, and she was always the first to read a finished manuscript, and, you know, because she is, you know, a huge part of why I am what I am. I mean, she's the one that read me Tolkien and The Hobbit as a kid. So, you know, I had a hard time getting back around to writing those books in those series for a few years, and right now I've got two in the pipeline. I've got just waiting to be edited, and I think they're absolutely, you know, when I came back into them, I mean, it was like returning home. I mean, one's The Crimson Rain, it's book 5 in the Rising Dawn Saga, and the other one is Path of Valor, and that's book 4 in the Fires in Eden series. Both are epic scale ensemble cast, very involved, very complex plots, a lot of good characters, and those characters, I mean, they called to me, they really did, and I missed them, and so, yeah, by the time I finally, you know, had gone through a few years and done, you know, Rain Valkyrie Tales and got some other things established, like, you know, Hellscapes and the Faraway Saga had begun and things like that. I returned, you know, to my what I call my roots series, and those really, I mean, it was a homecoming, and I really missed them. And often through the years, you know, I thought about those characters and those worlds often, and a lot percolated. And I think that, yeah, I mean, now I'm in a groove on both of those series, and I have the next books planned out. I definitely have the next books planned out really, really well. Like I said, I don't over outline. I don't box myself in entirely, but I do have the directions for them and what's going on with some of all the character arcs. So yeah, I mean, I can definitely say, yeah, you miss them a lot. And yeah, it leaves you a little bit of a melancholy kind of feeling and a little sad. And so I think that, yeah, when I finally finish those series up, I think, yeah, it'll be a little bittersweet maybe. But you know, and kind of, if you know my writing and my worlds, you know, it's kind of like C.S. Lewis says, you know, further up and further in, you know, there's always, the story always goes on, you know, it always will. I believe in the eternal, timeless view of things.
If you leave it open-ended, like Anne did, for instance, if you leave it open-ended, you can always revisit those characters a decade down the road, you know. You can always go back. So it's not like, you know, you're ending your relationship with them. You could always go back to them.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely you could. And I think, yeah, that's, you know, without getting, I'm not giving away spoilers, but yeah, some of the character arcs will be hard to do that because of where they end with certain characters there, obviously, but you certainly can, I think, with a lot of things. And certainly once you've established a world, one of the things I love is that you can explore that world. And that's something like I've done with the Chronicles of Ave, for instance, where they are standalone short stories. They're set in the same world as the Fires in Eden series. And so they're individual tales with different characters, and they're in sometimes very different settings that readers have not encountered in the series books. And I think often, you can give rise to all kinds of new stuff as well. And that can be a fun thing for a writer to take on, for sure.
True.
Mm-hmm.
And Kenzie Michael, hello, Kenzie. She's in the chat room, and she's asking, you know, who your editor was. Well, your editor is moi, me, myself, and I.
I've had several. I've had several very good ones. I've worked with some, and I'm going to sing the praises of them, too. Karen Leet had edited several of my books, also Amanda DeBoard. Both are exceptional editors who I would not hesitate to recommend to anybody. Never, you know, like I said, just because I work tight with Holly now on the editing side is not, I think, due to them. I just want to say that clear. They were fantastic. But Holly and I do have a good vibe. I liken it in some ways to like Harriet and Robert Jordan. I don't know if you knew this, but Robert Jordan, his wife was his editor, and there are others that have that type of dynamic, other type of writers with their significant others, their editor. And this works in a case where you have someone with the personality of Holly, who's can be very blunt and is not afraid to be blunt, and is and I know she's got my back, and so when she is saying something or knocking me over the head for changing a character's name, you know, a little bit into the story or something like that, then she's definitely not one to let things slide or sugarcoat anything. She's tough. And and at the same time, you know, I know she's doing it for my best interest. So, yeah, she knows my work really, really well at this point. So in our particular situation, it does make for a very good dynamic. And it's something that I see when I have a good relationship with a writer that I work with as an editor, where we've developed a good personal relationship and you know, definitely have click. And I also know they're writing really well, and I've worked with them more than once and things like that. You really, really, you know, get in tune, and is the best way I can describe it. And yes, I think that's something for
all writers, of course, have their style. And once you work with an editor long enough, you know, the editor gets to know that style, and they're not going to hinder that in any way or change your voice. A good editor is just going to give it, zhuzh it up, okay? Zhuzh it up is how I'm going to say it. You do not, you know, mess with the author's voice. It drives me nuts. You got to tell them when they need to reel it back, you know, and things like that. And their quirks, you get used to their quirks as an editor. I know Steve's quirks as far as writing, like the whole name change thing. Mm-hmm. That's his biggest one. Because he writes a lot of fantasy and alternate worlds.
Names.
And so he's got these fantastical names, and he'll switch them in the middle of the title and don't go back. And so then I'll be reading, and I'll be like, wait a minute. Whoa, back up here. You know, and I'm like, wait a minute. That wasn't so-and-so's name here. His name was here. Yeah, and I'm like, Stephen, did it again. And he's like, I swear I changed them. I swear I did. I said, you didn't. But once you get to know your author that you're editing for, once you get to know them, you know to look out for that stuff. Repetitive words, you know, because every author has their favorite words. So you got to look out for the repetition words. Once you get to know them, you know their words that they love very much, and you've got to watch that repetition, you know, and point that out because about over the weekend, you can read your manuscript 100 times. Mm-hmm. You're not going to catch everything. You're going to complete your brain just skips over stuff. You'll leave out words. You change stuff, and you just skip right over it, and then that new pair of eyes comes along, bam. Finds it immediately, and you're like, "How did I not see that?" And it's just psychology.
That's it.
I mean, it's just our brain fills it in. You know,
brain
you leave
fills
out an
in the gap.
Simple words. Yep, your brain fills it in, and every time you read that sucker, your brain's going to fill that in again, and you're never going to see it. So you cannot self-edit. You can self-edit to the point of doing a clean copy to hand off to your editor,
to an
beta reader.
Yes,
beta
absolutely.
Reader,
no,
editor.
No question. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, our guest tonight is here now, and unfortunately, she had an electrical outage. Oh no! But power's back on, and she is here. So I am excited. So I'm going to go ahead and give the introduction with no further delay. Tonight's guest is an author, publisher, podcaster, public speaker, film executive producer, and now a bookstore owner. Afterthoughts, which is the first book in her mind-bending series, option for a film by Kilted Pictures. She has appeared center page for stories in Leo Weekly and in Today's Woman magazine, and is also an associate publisher for Stardust Romance, an imprint of Hydra Publications. Recently, she opened in LaGrange, Kentucky, From the Ground Up, a brand new bookstore. So tonight, welcoming onto the Star Chamber show, definitely someone that everybody loves to see at Imaginarium, the one, the only, Lynn Tencher. Lynn, welcome aboard.
Hey.
There you are. I'm so glad you got the power back. Great to have you on the show.
I didn't even know it had been off. I was watching the clock on the wall, and anyway, it's 45 minutes behind.
No.
So I cannot apologize enough for
being
late.
No, you got hit with a transformer outage is what happened, because that happens once in a while where we are, and the transformers will blow and throws everything off, and if you don't catch that it happened, then yes, that can happen very easily. So, but I'm glad you are here. I mean, definitely, and we'll go a little bit over the live show and record a little bit longer just for you, because you just have you are multifaceted. That's the right word. Author, publisher, podcaster, filmmaker, and I'm like, oh, it just makes me just, how could she take all this on? Bookstore owner. I mean, that is awesome. And you have the great Michael Williams, you know, original Dragonlance author, coming up on, I believe it's March 9th, signing, and you have lots of cool signings coming up. We've talked about it on the show. Hopefully a few of the listeners are some of the people that called to arrange signings with you, but we've been talking about that, and definitely exciting to have a new indie bookstore in the region. So, us about where would you like to start? Would you like to start talking about your writing, or would you like to talk about the store right away? Let's give you a chance to get settled in with a topic you'd like to kick off with here.
Well, first I would like to say you did a very good job at making me sound very, very good.
Well, you are very, very good. You are very, very good.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate that.
I mean, there's a reason Tony has you as an associate publisher for his romance imprint. There's a reason why, you know, you can get a bookstore off the ground and have people coming to it. There's a reason why your films are being your books are being optioned for film, and why you are a finalist and award winning and all that good stuff. Yeah, there's a reason. you earned it. So,
well, I really appreciate that.
No
but
problem.
But I guess to really start off, I'd love to talk about the bookstore. Because that's my main focus right now. So
that's the hot topic.
Yeah,
well, let's take it from the ground
really
up.
Excited.
Let's take this from the ground up then.
Absolutely. I started it off, you know, I literally built the store from the ground up, which is why I called it that way, from penny zero up to where it is now. And I did it really quickly, which surprised me. But I pretty much just threw out there into the universe that I wanted to open another bookstore, because I used to own Karen's Book Barn in LaGrange for a little while, and I really missed it. So it's like the second I said that, everything just fell into my lap. I had people sending me money and books and hooking me up with different location possibilities, and it created itself, really. You know, my main focus in the bookstore is not just a bookstore, that I also wanted to be able to build writers from the ground up and, people from the ground up. So I'm investing now that the bookstore's up and going in trying to get programs up and going, like having a mentorship program where I could actually take authors from the very beginning of the process all the way through to marketing after the book is published. So there's a lot I'm trying to do beyond just being a retail location. So that's kind of where I'm throwing all my passions right now.
Yeah, I figure you'd take some angles like that for sure. Because you, of course, I've mentioned you're a fantastic person to have at Imaginarium, in programming, and this world very well. From publishing side, from the writing side, and from the bookstore side. So. Yeah, you couldn't be better positioned than to do what you're doing. I mean, it's definitely a needed thing, and definitely could help authors avoid a lot of pitfalls and red flags. And I'm really glad to see that you are going to be doing workshops and mentorships and things like that, in addition to, of course, retail and signings and all that kind of fun stuff. But so tell us a little bit behind the scenes. The volume that it takes to stock a bookstore, and what – How do you approach that? Because that's something that I've thought about. I'm like that, you know, if I was starting like from scratch to open a bookstore, like how do you approach the stocking of it between new and used? And of course, working with distributors and all that good stuff. How do you decide what to have in a, you know, because I'm assuming you didn't have enormous space to fill, but still, I mean, you still got to get quite a few books in there to put on the shelves.
Right.
How does that process go?
Oh, gosh.
What's it like?
Well, it started off, it was kind of daunting. I say, you know, it all fell in my lap, but still at the same time, it was a little daunting to try to make sure that I had everything covered, because I wanted to make sure that I had a wide variety, all the different genres and all that. But mm-hmm. I was lucky in the fact that I've had some really great donors that donated a good variety of inventory. And then I was lucky on top of that, because I know the people that ended up with Kieran's Book Barn in the end before they closed it down, they still had quite a lot of inventory in pretty much all the different genres. So I stumbled in on being able to get that. So that helped me lay a nice base. But then I've also, you know, found some places where I could buy used books relatively cheap or really cheap and be able to, you know, build a cash flow off of that for the store. But, you know, I've really leaned on a lot of people just giving me books in some amazing different genres, and even down to the coffee table books. And it didn't take long to fill up the store. And then, you know, I've been in business for 3.5 months and I've already outgrown the space that I rented. So I'm moving into a bigger space in the next few weeks so I can continue to grow. So it's just been kind of a whirlwind, and I can't believe it's actually done as well as it has.
That is amazing. Yeah, because I was thinking, what a daunting thing to undertake, deciding what to stock and how to go about filling one, and you know what to feature. But you know LaGrange well, and you got an idea of how the market works there. But you're also, you know, as an indie author yourself, I know you also have a spot for the indie authors as well. So you've got that too. And so what is it right now? Holly and I are hoping, we just finally have gotten the ability to start shooting out for some little trips. And we mentioned we went up to Dayton to see the Wright Writers of Dayton this past weekend. And we do plan on coming to see you in person. Can't wait to do that. Mm-hmm. So in very near future, but go ahead and describe, how is your store laid out? If somebody were to walk in off the street, what's it like right now?
If you walk up to the store, it's a red house with a bay window and a front porch. So it's like walking into a home. And I tried to take that on through to the rest of the business because I wanted to feel comfortable and homey. So I have, you know, some tables and stuff set up with games on them, so people could just come in and hang out. But you basically walk into a gift shop area where it's my partner, Missy Steyer with Mystic Bliss Creation. She does a lot of handmade jewelry and metaphysical items and just, you know, all kinds of really neat crafty things that she does. So you come in, you kind of go through the gift shop first, and then I have two separate rooms, one with the bay window and then one in the back. And then I have like a storage room in the back, but I have bookshelves and there's a lot of windows. So I have bookshelves lined up all around the perimeter of both rooms. With shorter bookshelves under the window. So it's all, you know, you get a lot of natural light, and it's all, you know, I painted it like a light yellow. It's just a very homey, trying to get a nice positive energy into the place. And so it's, you know, it's a relaxing way to kind of to mill around and shop. I even have poofs in the floor so that you could sit down and look at the lower bookcases and, you know, just try to make it a friendly place.
Holly, this sounds like right up your alley here, because not only books, but you also have the kind of Mystical Creations gift shop going on too.
Yep.
That's right up your. Mm-hmm. That sounds. Holly's getting excited. I already know.
Yep.
Well, it's like Missy and I got together. You want to poop?
Yeah, it's
like Missy and I got. Yeah, that's good. I like them too. And it, well, what got me to even bring my poofs in is I had some poor pregnant lady in the store that was trying to look at the bottom shelves. And
yeah.
She was really struggling to get to those bottom shelves. And I'm like, the poor thing needs something she can sit on.
Well, that's so. It. And it's not just for them. It's for people like me that have pain issues. I
uh-huh.
can't stay stooped over like that. See it? And you know me, I'm so tall that everything from like waist down, it's such an effort. I have such severe back pain anyway. And so, yeah, mm-hmm. even doing dishes, I'm hunched over. You know, so, yeah, the lower levels are, like, off limits, you know. But if I've got poofs, I can sit down
there
and scoot along and look
That's
at everything.
It.
Yeah.
That's right. That's the plan.
I love it. Love it.
Oh, that's awesome. And I've noticed that, yeah, definitely, this has been a good time for independent bookstores opening. You know, we
mm-hmm.
not too long ago had a new friend of ours, Bobby Craig of Fabled Forest Books up in Georgetown, who had opened a new store. And then not long after that, you had opened from the ground up. And so I'm guessing that, you know, as far as what like Bobby and you see, it's the market is warming up to tangible books and buying books again. To be able to
mm-hmm.
to do this kind of thing, venture. Is that some of the data that you're getting and seeing? Is that people
yes.
coming back to print?
Yes, they're coming back to print. They're coming back to the small mom and pop shop feel, getting
mm-hmm.
away from you know, the big box retailers.
Right.
I think people just like to physically hold that book. You can smell it. You can hold it. You don't have to worry about
yeah.
it if it got wet, you know, or you know, whatever. And you can pass it around. You can't really pass around an iPad or you know, whatever. So
no.
And
you can take it everywhere with you, you know, and see it.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to worry
yeah.
about the glare of the sun or on the beach. You don't have to worry about, you know, getting wet.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you still have to worry about getting wet, but you know what I mean. Like electronics,
yeah.
you have to worry about them more. They're much harder to
mm-hmm.
travel with.
Right. And you know, I tried to make the bookstore, too, to be just more than just that. Because I want, you know,
mm-hmm.
like I said,
mm-hmm.
the programs and the gifts and all that. So it's, you know, just building upon that basic
mm-hmm.
bookstore
so,
model.
So let me ask this then. Do you have it like certain sections for kids, certain sections for
mm-hmm.
adults? Or do you have it like sectioned off that way? Or, you know, do you have like one little play area for the kids? If somebody wants to bring their kids, is what I'm saying. You know, do they have a little area that they won't be,
uh-huh.
you know, bothering other people?
Right. It's like one of the first areas when you come into the store. It's actually part of what's in the bay window.
Cool.
I have a kids section. I have a little kids table. I didn't have that at first, and kids were kind of worrying me trying to sit down at the other
right.
tables because I got the counter height tables. So I'm like, I don't want some of the kids to fall down. So I got a little child's
right.
table in there. I have a rocking chair. I've had several
cool.
parents just come in and curl up in the rocking chair and read their kids' books off the shelf. And
oh,
I'm totally
see,
fine
neat.
With that because you know, that's kind of what I wanted, is people to come in and hang out. They don't, you know,
right.
I didn't want it to feel
very
retail-y. Yeah.
You're encouraging young readers, them's future customers.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, bring them on.
Yep. And we're getting ready to start
truth.
Doing, yeah, we're getting ready to start doing some programs for them too, like having someone come in and read to children's groups, you know, different
mm-hmm.
age groups or whatever. So, and I've got like little blank bookmarks that they can color and take those with them or just, you know, just different things. I'm going to start trying to focus on that as well. So,
right. Cater to them.
Yep.
Yeah, that's what I love about the independent bookstores is that they become kind of
yeah.
like the home for a local writing or regional even writing community. And it's about the, you know, it's about the community as much as it is
a
you know, store
yeah.
where you can get books.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's
right.
definitely
right.
a home for the creative
mm-hmm.
type to embrace and feel at home at and definitely hang out and have a, you know, like you said, events and activities there. It sounds like, yeah, that's it, real good direction you're going in.
That's what I'm trying. Uh-huh. So far, it's working. So hopefully it keeps up.
So, Holly, you had a question? I think I talked over.
I have the question and kind of a statement, too, because you kind of answered it because you said, you know, you have parents come in to actually take a book off the shelf, read it to their kids, you know, in the rocking chair and whatnot. And then the big stores, they kind of frown on that. You know, like the retail chains, they're like, you need to purchase that first, or, you know, you can't, you know, be doing that. And so that was my question is, do you let people come in and you know, do that, which obviously you do with the kids, but like can readers come in and just sit down and maybe just, you know, start reading a book to see if they like it, sit down in one of the chairs, and if they do, they can purchase it, or, you know, if they decide they don't, they can put it back on the shelf. That was my question.
Yeah, absolutely, and especially when I get moved into the new location, there's the new location, which is right next door. So if anybody, you know, just found me, just know I'm going to be right next door. It has a fireplace, and I'm going to put in like a sitting area with different chairs and stuff around the fireplace so that people can come in and sit and relax. Because to me, especially with a small town independent bookstore, you're building relationships. And if you let people come in and hang out and get to try things or just, you know, just carry on a conversation for a little while or whatever, then you're building those relationships and they're going to keep coming back. And you know, that's what I want. And that's what I'm, one of the things I missed the most when I sold Karen's Book Barn was especially the regulars that I had coming in. I got to know a lot of people and care about a lot of people. So, you know, I really like that atmosphere and that's what I want to continue to foster going forward.
Well, that is, you got a fireplace. So Holly, when you're reading one of those books, Holly, and you get mad at the author for killing a character, she has a fireplace now, so you can immediately throw that book into the fire. But you have to pay for it, I'm sure.
It first. You have to purchase it first.
Yeah.
I don't promote book burning, but I understand. Yes, no. There's been books I want to chuck into the fire.
We've all read them. Awesome. We have all read books that we wanted to throw. Yes,
we have.
We have
all read them.
Or written.
Well, that's
by
convenient.
The way it sounds,
By
the way it sounds, I just want to move in. I just, you know, don't want to visit. I'm just going to, you know, pop a squat and I'll just sleep on a poof. At this point,
there you go. I do have a kitchen in the back and a, you know, a bathroom, so
there we go.
You just wouldn't be
That's
able to shower, but
well, a kitchen. Well, yeah, Holly could definitely earn her keep because she's like a pretty much a chef, so she could definitely make good on that and cook you all gourmet lunches, or something during the day. but. Yeah, tell us a little bit about the events that you have coming up, if you'd like, if you'd like to spotlight some of the authors. I mentioned Michael Williams because I just happened to be talking to him today, in fact, and he had mentioned coming up there. And but yeah, tell us about because I'm sure you've gotten a good response in the indie community around here for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've got several authors lined up. I'm trying to remember who all they are because there's quite a few, but I have D.A. Carey that's coming in, I think, on the 10th. Like you said, I got Michael Williams coming. I have Dan Klefstad coming back. This is his second book signing.
Great
he's
guy.
Awesome. He's got a new book coming out, on how to promote.
Yep.
And DIY
promo.
And he's going to help me with the mentorship program as well. I have like Terry Chambers and Joanne Hepperman and I just have a long line of people that's been coming in, and as they're coming in too, it's helping me build the local author section because I always take a few books and put them on the shelf. So, you know, it's kind of a win-win. But I also have other events coming. I have the writers group that I'm starting at the end of the month. We have three book clubs. We have a romance book club, a mystery thriller book club, and a sci-fi fantasy book club that's getting into full swing now. We're like on meeting three coming up. So those are taking off.
Fantastic.
I have a writers group. I don't know if I mentioned that.
Yes.
What else?
That's awesome.
There's something else coming. The mentorship program's coming. I've got like a tea that I'm working on once a month where people could come in and have an author read to them during the tea while they have tea and biscuits or whatever. So
Holly would love that.
So and I have a trauma support group. So, you know, even kind of getting out of the literary world a little bit,
mm-hmm.
which I met Heather Hart through a book signing that she did because she wrote a book on trauma, but she's starting to do a trauma support group one Thursday a month where we can help rebuild people from the ground up as well. So it just seemed to really fit in with what we were doing. And that group, they had their first meeting and that went really well for them. So hopefully that's a support group
that
we can continue to grow there too.
Well, sure. Absolutely. That's part of the community. And believe me, all he knows is Imaginarium with programming. I mean, the things that address mental health are some of the most, sought after panels and things like that.
Yes.
I mean, there's definitely a need for that kind of thing in the creative community. So that is absolutely fits in beautifully. And I'm glad to hear you're doing that. That's awesome.
I think the people who have been through crap, or, you know, good or bad, make the best creative people because they have that reserve to draw from. And that reaches a lot of other people.
It sucks, some of it, but it is therapeutic to write about it.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can help someone else.
And that's it. And you can share with others your story and help someone else to show them, I overcome. Here's my story, and even if it only helps one person, you've done your job.
Right, and that's exactly what Heather's doing. So I'm there 100% to help support her with this group. So,
fantastic.
Yeah.
Sounds like a lot of stuff going on and this early. That's a good sign. And what is your schedule like at the bookstore? Because I know sometimes people, open a limited schedule when they're opening a new independent store, and then they broaden it later. And what are your hours at the current time for the bookstore?
At the current time, we're closed Monday and Tuesday, and then we're open Wednesdays, Thursday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. and then Friday and Saturday from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. However, April 1st, I'm going to extend that to where we're open every day from like 11 to 6 or 11 to 7, except for Sunday is going to be a little shorter, I think 1 to 6. So we started off open every day, and then during the winter, because LaGrange just kind of shuts down during the winter, unfortunately, so we shortened our hours kind of around what they're doing, the rest of the Main Street program does, just to get us through winter, and then we're going right back at it full steam. But even though I say we have a little more limited hours right now, most nights we're still open later because of the writers group and the readers groups and the support group and all that. We're all there like 6 o'clock and later. So even our posted hours are closed. Yeah, somebody's there. So I look forward to expanding that back out again because, not everybody shops during, work hours. You need to be open so people could come in, after work or whatever.
Sure. Holly, she says that she's going to change the hours on April 1st. So what's going to happen, though, is she's going to run the regular hours on April 1st, and then when people try to come after that, it's going to be April Fools on those people.
I didn't think about that. But
You're setting up a good April Fool's joke right there. You are.
Yeah, sorry, folks.
But, but no, that's actually a fairly good hours. Those are good hours for the week. I mean, yeah, I wasn't even expecting you to be open that extensively right now. It's really good. But go ahead, Holly.
Yeah. Oh, I was going to ask, do you have, like, drinks that people can purchase? Or can people, like, bring their own? Or, you know, how does that work? And snacks, and how does that work?
They can definitely bring their own. I do have some coffee and a lot of different teas, from herbal teas to decaf and all the regular teas, some soft drinks, some waters. And then I have just some light snacks, like packages of M&Ms or a little pack of muffins or something. Just, you know, if somebody is hanging out and they get a little hungry, they can, you know, be able to get stuff. Plus, I have all that available. If you join a book club or something, you get all that for free.
Oh, cool.
So, you know, when you're coming and hanging out for a couple hours, you don't have to pay for a Coke in addition to, you know, the book club fee.
Right.
So that's all part of that package. Yeah.
That is nice. That's especially important for those with younger ones, you know.
Mm-hmm. And then we usually have a big popcorn machine in there, too, that I can make popcorn. It's not in there right now because we had lost some space. And I needed some space for some other stuff. But once I get moved, we'll break the big popcorn machine back out.
Ooh,
fantastic.
Nice.
That's fun.
That's nice.
Yeah.
That is fun. And like I said, people, that keeps people there longer. Because, you know, if they do get the munchies or they get thirsty, you know, they're not going to be like, well, we need to go because I'm getting hungry or, you know, I'm getting thirsty. Mm-hmm. We need to, you know, you provide that. You're going to keep people there longer because, they can get, it's a one-stop shop. They can get what they need. Mm. And they can keep
Them have people, by. I've even had people come in late in the evening just for the coffee.
Right on. Right on. At work.
Yeah, I think I can say that you have a sense, not as, you know, a bookstore owner, but you have a sense as an author and a book buyer yourself and reader of what you like in a bookstore and what makes a bookstore great and what you want to, what makes you comfortable. And so you are bringing some things to the table and as an owner, I think that are, you know, definitely essential. I mean, to having this kind of vibe and because you can see it from the other perspectives of your customers, your writers, your everybody, and I can see that you're integrating all the right things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. I'm trying really hard.
Yeah, it's an undertaking. Yeah, it's definitely an undertaking. Yeah, and I understand.
Oh, I've got to ask this: how is it affecting your writing? I mean, have you been more encouraged to write, or are you finding you have less time, or how is it hurting or helping your writing life?
Well, honestly, when I was setting it all up, I didn't do any writing because I was so dedicated on that. But now that things are up and now that things are up and settled, I can write at the store. I can write, you know, at home later. But the inspiration is definitely there to get back to it because I've got Juna, my fifth book in the series. I got to get it out because I've got people bugging me for it, and I don't blame them because it's taken me forever. So I need to get that out. But the fact that I could sit, to me, I like being in a bookstore, right? So when I'm there and it's slow in the afternoon because, you know, everybody's at work or whatever, then I can focus on that a little bit. You know, in addition to making sure that the store's running and marketing, everything is marketing, no matter what part of the process you're in, whether it's from writing to bookstore owner, most of what you do is marketing. So
it's a lot of that. Yep.
Yeah. Yep. You know, throw some writing in there somewhere.
But I figured, because Holly and I can speak directly about this from this weekend, it was just so good to be among creative people and our kind of people again when we went to Dayton with the Wright Writers. For you, I mean, that's now every day. I mean, you are among your tribe on a daily basis, mm-hmm. and you're seeing writers, other writers regularly interacting with them. I mean, to me, that has to be a good feeling. I mean, I know there's a lot of stress with running a business, but I mean, you're among your people, you know, on a regular
right.
basis, and that has got to be a little inspiring for the creative side. I mean, I can definitely see that.
Yeah, I mean, business ownership is a stress in itself, but it's a happy stress for me in what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's where I'm meant to be, obviously, because I keep putting my toe in all the different aspects of this world. So it's definitely where I'm supposed to be.
Yeah, because, I mean, yeah,
well,
you like we mentioned, yeah, you definitely have a lot of activity going on.
To me, see, it would actually encourage me to write more, because you are getting that interaction and that connection with the community
mm-hmm.
on a daily basis, whether it be
mm-hmm.
readers, writers, you know, just the creative sphere. You're getting that inspiration. And,
mm-hmm.
yeah, I think it would actually, you know, make you more productive, you know, give you some different ideas. And with all the groups
mm-hmm.
that you have going, definitely a bonus.
Right, and
yeah.
I do draw a lot of inspiration from other people. So it's, you know, anytime I go to a writer's group, I get, you know, so motivated and you know, it's almost like a high for me when you get
mm-hmm.
you get to talking to creative people, you know, and then you just want to go create. So I really like
oh, yes.
being able to throw myself totally into this world. So hopefully I can churn out some really great books from this as well.
Yeah. And you mentioned, I mean, like I said, you're around some people. You mentioned that, I mean, you're around good energy people like Dan Klefstad. I mean, he is a go-getter.
Mm-hmm.
He's such positive energy. Michael Williams is just, I just
mm-hmm.
love the guy. I mean, he's such a good guy. And I mean, and every, all the names you mentioned, I mean, yeah, they're wonderful people that are coming in. So, I mean, yeah, you're around a lot of, as I call it, positive chi, you know, that you're around a lot of that good energy type vibe. And that's got to, like I said, you know, we talk, it's tough being an indie author. It's obviously tough being a business owner. But I mean, being around the positive type of energy, yeah, that's definitely got to kind of counterbalance, you know, some of the stress for sure.
Yep. Absolutely. So,
yep.
You
so,
know, like I said,
yeah.
I'm in my happy place.
Yes. Yeah. Cause
and
it sounds
really
like, yeah, everything.
Yeah.
How many people
really
do you have working with you at this point? How big is the staff? Are you shouldering most of the burden right now, or do you have a crew with you yet, or?
It's mostly me. My nephew is helping me
mm-hmm.
out some because he lives like down the street and I live 45 minutes away from the store. So he's there to help me, especially if I can't get there for one reason or another. And then my partner, Missy, that does Mystic Bliss Creation, she helps me out as well. So between
mm-hmm.
the three of us, we have it covered. Hopefully, you know, get the cash flow going a little more, then I can afford to hire some people and be able to stay open a little later or whatever and grow that too. So that's the long range forecast because, you know, when I opened the bookstore, I was able to pay bills. I haven't been able to pay myself
mm-hmm.
yet, but I've been able to pay bills. And that's
right.
the first.
Oh, I understand.
Challenge.
Believe me, we get it.
Uh-huh.
We get it.
Oh, yeah.
I know that is. Everybody thinks it's, oh, you're a business owner. You know, oh, yeah, it's great. No, there's a lot to it. And sometimes, yeah, you're the one that has to suffer for a while. And
right.
yeah, I can vouch for that for sure. And
yeah.
But
money,
I do
right
hope
back
that.
In.
Yep. Yeah. Always gotta reinvest, and it's definitely a tough period. Now, I do know that it is. You know, it's not probably an easy thing to keep up with release schedules of the big books that are coming out nationally. You know, deciding you know what to allocate your budget to as far as like new releases coming. You know, then just to use for lack of a better word, the New York Times bestsellers, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be the hot new book nationally. How do you go? What I'm curious, man. What is? Because I know you don't have an unlimited budget to get in a bunch of new stuff coming out every week. How do you approach that? I'm curious as for your market.
I listen to my people. the customers mm-hmm. that come in, if they're looking for a specific book, and then, I know to carry that. That's one way. And then I also, kind of try to keep an eye on what the top couple of books are. The top couple of books is what I try to pull in to the book clubs initially, when we first got started, just to have something to start with, and then we can start picking books mm-hmm. from then on out. But the book clubs help too, because I could talk to them, what are they reading, what are they looking forward mm-hmm. to, or whatever. So to just go and like spend my budget on getting the next five books out, I don't do that, because, I'm not cash flush. So I want to get the people that are actually coming into my store, what are they looking for? And then I can
exactly.
provide that. Mm-hmm. And if somebody comes in and I don't have what they're looking for, I can order it for them.
There you go.
So.
Yeah. Well, you won't probably have to worry about George R. R. Martin's next novel for at least five more years. So, as you know, I can't imagine yet, because I mean, you can go broke just trying to stock what's coming out on a weekly basis. I mean, just in terms of the sheer volume of titles that get released in a given week. And I've always marveled at the independent stores, the smaller indie bookshops, and how do they navigate that. But you're right. I mean, you have to listen mm-hmm. specifically to your customers and decide, mm-hmm. what they're geared toward and cater to that. And as opposed to, not necessarily worrying about, looking at just having every book on the top of the chart and looking more toward what you're hearing in the store. And so, it sounds like you got a good sense for that, especially the book clubs. That's a good point. Yeah. Listening to them mm-hmm. as far as what's the hot stuff that, is going to be coming out in the near future. That's a good resource for you. But
it's been out for a little while that they still haven't read yet or whatever, then mm-hmm. That's something to pull from too, because some people, not everybody buys books at what's at the top of the chart.
Right.
They're looking
Absolutely.
For it. They might have heard of Colleen Hoover. They mm-hmm. might have been hearing about her for months, and then all of a sudden say, "Hey, here's one of her books." I want
mm-hmm.
that.
Let's check it out. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or getting like they finally get to hear about Dan Klestad and Fiona's Guardians, and
mm-hmm.
they go over to your indie section and pick that one up.
That's right.
Yes. Yeah, his vampire novel, folks. Yes, that's one we talked to him about. But how many author signings do you plan on having? Just because I know there's probably some writers listening tonight who are, may reach out to you. And what's your general schedule for that? And how far ahead are you booked right now?
I'm booking up through March. And some Saturdays I have three or four in at a time, which is great, because mm-hmm. then sometimes they can get
Neat.
Sales off of each other's, people that come in. But, with my space is kind of limited. I can get three or four authors in right now. When I move, that's going to be a little better. And when the weather's nicer, that's going to be even better, because I have a nice little courtyard that I can set some people out in
mm-hmm.
and be able to do more. But right now I'm taking as many people as want to come in. So, we'll find a
Fantastic.
Spot for them. It's like our best time is noon to 3, and, you don't have to be a best-selling author to come sign books, because Lord knows I've not been. And, to be able to sit someplace and whether I sell one book or 20, it's good for me either way. So I'm really trying to be that for people, especially, young authors starting out, so they can be able to get the experience and maybe make a couple of sales
yep.
or a couple of connections or meet another author and learn from them. I'm trying to stay as open as possible.
Yeah,
would an author that's interested in, you carrying their books, how do they apply? What is the process to go through that they need to do to get the book on the shelf in your store?
They email me, and right now, because I'm not cash flush, we do consignment. So we will accept a couple of copies of the book and put it on the shelf. and, you know, see how it does. And, you know, when customers come in, I'm talking about, if you're interested in local authors, here's this or this genre, you know, you might want to meet that. So basically it's a consignment form. I try to do a little better than most bookstores. I do where I keep 30% instead of most that do 40, and then they get the 70%. Because, you know, I know how hard it is to make money in this, because you write a book, you're going to be rich. That's not the case. Not at all.
I'm just saying, that's why I've had to go 2 years without being able to get Blanton's and had to depend on a gift for Christmas to finally have my Blanton's bourbon again. Because, yes, because us indie authors are so wealthy.
Right. Even
I know,
publishers.
I know.
The publishers don't make money either. So.
Oh, that's even worse.
I
understand. So is it a site you direct people to, or you said email, but do you find the email on the website, or do you want to give it out on the show, or how would people find you online?
They can go to fromthegroundupbooks.com, or they can email me at fromthegroundupbooks@gmail.com.
Great.
Awesome.
Yeah, because there's definitely some really – I mean, our region is filled with some very proactive authors that really represent themselves so well and promote well, and hopefully can bring some traffic into your place. Because LaGrange is a wonderful. I mean, and let's talk about LaGrange. I mean, it is a great small town. We love going to Tony Acree's book fair every year there. I mean, just an absolute blast that Holly and I have. When we go up there to Tony's event, and always love the town. I mean, great restaurants, great, nice, just laid back, relaxed. I mean, it's a pleasant visit. I mean, so you're in such a wonderful town, and it's right outside of Louisville. It's not far at all from Louisville. Mm-hmm. So if you're in, in the area, you get the best of both worlds. You get the small town feel and wonder and relaxed vibe, but you're also, can be near, you're near one of the big areas. So anybody from Louisville or Cincinnati or Lexington, I mean, this is a place that's easy to get to and easy to navigate.
Got great people, got great unique little shops. It's a fun place to be. Plus you've got the train that comes right down Main Street.
I was going to say
the track
train.
Literally. The tracks are literally my front yard at the bookstore.
So yeah.
You could sit out on the porch and watch trains all day if you want. But, it's a great place to be. I was born there and raised there. And even though I live in Shepherdsville now, that's where I wanted to put a store again once, I realized I wanted to do this again. Because, the community supports it so well. They love their local book shop, and they love supporting local authors. And it's just – I don't know. It just seemed like, it is the perfect place for this. So.
Yeah, between you and Tony, I mean, you guys are becoming the kind of anchors for a good hub of writing community activity between, just really I commend the two of you, for building that, because you're bringing a lot of attention to LaGrange, Oldham County, for sure. I mean, with what you both are doing there with the bookstore and the publishing house activity and the events that you're doing and participating in. And of course we love having you both, at our shindig in Louisville. But it's, definitely, wonderful what you're doing. It shows what just a few people can do if they get proactive in a community. It doesn't take an army to instigate, and you just need an instigator, and that's where what you've done well. So I hope Field of Dreams, you built it, and I hope they come in droves. For sure.
Thank you. And I know especially when I have authors in the store, I'm always bragging on Imaginarium. Have you gone? That's great. You like workshops,
Well, thank you.
We're always sending people that direction. So.
Yep, that's a difficult undertaking as well, which Ollie and I can tell you all about. But we all have to work together. And again, that kind of creative tribe thing. But it's wonderful to see the new store. I'm glad you're back in the bookstore world again, and I'm glad that it's helping your creative fires get back. And I'm also glad to hear some of the specific people that you're bringing in who are, I think the world of. I mentioned a few of them tonight, and it just sounds like you're off to a really good start here, for sure. And Holly, I know Holly's jazzed. Holly's want to take advantage of those what do you call them, the puff seats?
The puff seats.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, hopefully I'm setting it up so we can be there a good long time.
Yes, I've been looking for boots for the house. So yeah, I'm excited. Books, boots, tea, that's all I need.
That's right. Crystal,
and once you really get rolling, things are flowing great. Just remember, put in a little bourbon cabinet for the spec fic authors like me. But no, this is great. I am really excited. I was excited to begin with about you having a store, but just listening to you talk tonight, I mean, you're doing all the right things. I mean, all the right things. And I hope to see definitely the writing community respond and do great things to support you. And folks, please. You spread the word, from the ground up in LaGrange, Kentucky, and get the word out. Yeah, because definitely, it's got to get the, like you said, you got to get the cash flow going in a positive direction. So, encourage people to support the store. Yeah, to go visit, make sure, get something. Yeah, she'll have something that you want. Yeah, they'll be in there. So, make sure you get something.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Because, even though I'm there for all the other reasons, you got to have the money to get it, keep it going. That's for sure.
Oh, you have to. And we certainly will when we make our pilgrimage up. When Holly and I can sneak out of here on a Saturday afternoon, we'll come up and check that out and pick up a few gems ourselves. And Holly will probably blow half of a credit card on even the mystical section. She loves that stuff too. Before we round up tonight, though, I do want to give it a chance for you to talk a little bit about how is, you mentioned, you're writing again and you're back, you're back and getting more of a groove again. What's on the horizon for you book wise and what's that picture look like there?
Well, I'm finishing up. It's almost done, believe it or not. Juno, which is the fifth book in my mind-bending series, which is the one that Afterthoughts is in that was picked up for film. Tony Acree and I have collaborated on The Devil's Mark, which has been out for over a year anyway, probably about a year and a half. And he and I are starting to write the second one in that group. So hopefully we get that
Excellent.
Going soon. And we're going to be releasing a cover and the title and all that before long. And then I'm also, once I wrap Juno up, I'm working on a young adult fantasy series called The Winberry Journal. And hopefully I can get the first book of that out within the next year is what I'm hoping. So I've been working on that for a while, too. So it's like,
sure.
I'm anxious to start turning out some stuff now.
Right. Yeah, now the dust is starting to settle on the bookstore. You can turn your eyes a little bit to getting some of your own work out there, which is great news. And you got it's an easy place to do your launch event, right? you got one in your backyard now.
People come in, they're like, "Where's your books?" And I'm like, this isn't about me here. I do have my books in there, but it's like I'm not displaying it out in the middle of everything because, this isn't about me.
Sure. But absolutely you should have your books there because, people are definitely going to ask for that if they come in the store.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure, after getting to know you and everything. So that's great news, and it looks like you have some good stuff on the horizon. You did mention, the film side of things. Do you have anything new to report there? How are things going on the film adaptation, executive producer side of your world? That's well, pretty interesting. I watch Tony quite a bit on his stuff in that area, and yeah, mm-hmm. just curious about your updates.
Nothing new in the last little while. We did the 8-minute teaser. Nothing moves fast in Hollywood.
Oh, I know. Oh, yes.
It takes a while.
We know that. We know that, too.
The teaser's there to pitch, you know, trying to get investors and all that. And the executive producers have been, mm-hmm. you know, but it's still on the burner. We're still working towards
sure.
getting the feature made. There's been yep. talk of turning it into television instead of film. There's been some bouncing back and forth between that. But,
mm-hmm.
You know, we're still getting some traction, but hopefully
yeah,
one
the
day
streaming
I'll get
world
out
is
something really exciting.
Yeah, the streaming yeah. world is such a good market right now. I mean, that just
yes.
has a lot of options
yes.
and
yep.
a lot of good stuff there. And
yes,
yes, we understand. Yes, this sometimes things take years to get that green light
mm-hmm.
or get that catalyst. It takes time sometimes. A lot of people don't understand that, but it does take time sometimes. And sometimes
mm-hmm.
it seems like things are not moving, and then all of a sudden, boom, you know, that one catalyst or one person, you know, can kind of get things kicked forward. And so, yeah,
mm-hmm.
I mean, it's good to hear that you have that on the burner as well. And, I know you don't have a whole lot of spare time, but, is there any other activities that you have going on, this year in other creative areas or have we about, covered most things here?
I think we've about covered most things, but, you know, the only other thing I try to do outside of this is trying to help keep up my farm and do some gardening, but as far as the creative world, I think I've about got that covered, except for I will be
yeah.
teaching, interviewing your characters at Imaginarium this year.
Yes.
So I got that
yeah.
covered.
That's going to be awesome. That is going to
yeah.
be awesome. And,
I've taught that there
yeah.
a couple of times. It's been really well received, so I'm looking forward to doing it
again. Yep,
and we'll have a good audience for you. I mean, we're already, like I said, there's already we're already ahead organizationally of where we were last year with just numbers of guest panelists and everything else, and so and attendees, and
mm-hmm.
so yes, definitely can expect a good group for you to.
Yep.
introduce yourself to, and I might add, this will be a definite place that I think a lot of people are going to be very excited to hear about your store as well, the ones that haven't yet.
Yeah,
it's going to
mm-hmm.
be a fun place to celebrate your store as well.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
and it's not too far from there.
Bring
Hot,
cards.
Skipping a jump.
Yeah, definitely bring business
yeah.
cards and cards or postcards or, you
the
know,
store.
About your store. Definitely bring them
oh,
back
yeah.
to
oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah. I started
local.
It's actually last year at Imaginarium was when I first decided I was doing it, opening the bookstore. And I did get to talk to some people then, but, you know, it was so early. I could see them looking at me going, yeah, right, this is going to happen.
yeah.
Right,
but now
right.
that it has happened, you know, I can give them something, offer them something now, so. So
right.
I'm excited.
Yeah, and you noticed, Holly, when Lynn was talking, and I didn't miss it, but you know that she is the kind of person that can do wonderful things because she just casually mentioned, got to run the farm, as one of the other activities to all this other stuff, run the farm.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Holly, that's not a minor. Like I said, you are
no,
capable
that's not
of
a
lot.
Thing.
Yeah. You.
Well, I have.
I'm impressed.
I have my husband to help me with that too. So.
Still,
most
though,
of the burden
that's
falls on him.
That's so
yeah.
Much.
Still, though, it's amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing. It's mind blowing. I tell you. as a person that like I said, I do multiple things, but yeah, just looking at what you've got on the plate, it's just like, yeah, I'm impressed.
That's a lot. Yeah, that's a lot.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
So,
When I fall down on something, y'all can help pick me back up.
Oh, yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, we definitely think the world of you, and I've wanted to have you on for a while, and that's why I was like, I'm just going to reach out and see if she wants to come on the show and talk about the new venture and everything, because I was like, I wasn't going to wait to hear from you any longer. I had to come. I was like, I'm going to go get Lynn and get her on the show here, because we've got to have you talk about this. And because it's such a great location, being run by a great person, a person that understands the life of the indie author and indie publisher as well. Might add, you also understand that, which is not always the case. You understand that world, it's just so much about this that I just got all the right elements. And I think, Holly, that's what I see. It's the elements. It's all there.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. So, and I appreciate you letting me continue to be on the show, even though I was late. And I felt so bad because I was
absolutely
so looking forward to it. And I kept thinking,
I knew something had happened.
Yeah.
It's not as bad as the night when
something had happened. Yeah.
We had a show once where we had a transformer explode in our court, like near a court, and our entire electricity went down and knocked everybody down, but my phone connection was the only thing holding on with the guest. That was it. And I didn't even have access to my board or anything.
The front door sucking out, and me and my son Noah were trying to hold it and pull it back in. I still had my headset on. And so everybody heard everything. Yeah. I was like, oh, my God, the door's being sucked out and being nowhere, pulling it back. Yeah. And I ended up doing it downstairs then. And I'm like, Steve, you should come to the basement. But he never did. But, yeah, I was downstairs for the rest of the show. Yeah.
Lynn, you'd be proud. I held the line. Lynn would be proud. Mm-hmm. I fiercely held the line and kept that show going. By God, I was going to go down with the ship. I held it on.
The show's got to go on. Yep.
That's right. So
The apocalypse is occurring outside, and I'm still chatting with the guests and trying to not pay attention to the mayhem. but what that is a convoluted way of saying is that, yes, life happens and things happen. And we, of course, understand, when those things come up, especially when you're talking about live broadcasting, you never can predict things. I mean, we had a show not too long ago where the entire Blog Talk Radio system crashed before the show, and we simply couldn't get logged in. There was no – it was way out of our hands. So things do happen. And so, we understand 100%.
That's why I my Weirdos in the Wild podcast, that's why I record it.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
We do some live, but mostly it's recorded.
I enjoy live.
Expect the crazy from us. You never know what's going to happen. It adds to the, mystery. They never know.
That's right.
It adds to the little bit to the fun and craziness, but some days it can be a little too much.
Like us.
But
we are nutballs, so it all adds to the mystique.
At least in this case, we were able to get you back on in the show and give you a chance to talk about the new bookstore and everything, and hopefully we've covered what you're hoping to cover. And is there anything that we didn't cover or anything you would like to say that we haven't yet given you an opportunity for before we wrap up?
I don't think so. I think we did. I think we got it.
Well, we did our job. All right.
That's right.
Very well.
Well, before I let you and Holly wrap it up, though, I just want to say thank you, Lynn. I admire you, have a lot of respect for you, and definitely count us as supporters of everything you have going on, not only as a writer, but also your film ventures and from the ground up. I mean, we're rooting for you, and just let us know how we can help in any way. So thanks for being on tonight.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. I was looking forward to it.
All right, and we'll see you, and we will see you soon. We will come up and see you soon, and definitely in person. But Holly, I'll turn it over to you to do the final ceremony here.
Yes, Lynn, thank you again. And most certainly, me and Steve will be up, and we'll get with you and maybe do a signing. Maybe, you know, have a couple authors come. We can maybe do something, you know, fun. We'll brainstorm for, you know, later spring when you have time open, and get your bearings and all that good stuff. And I want to invite everybody to join us next Wednesday, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Another great guest, another great talk. And good luck, Lynn, and everybody check her store out from the ground up. And have a good night.